Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
Back in Better Than Ever, Greeny, presented by Progressive Insurance. Oh, what a Sunday in sports it was. Two game sevens, final round of the PGA Championship, all of it spectacular, fascinating, and interesting. Jay Will is here. Let's go.
Here we go.
Only one place to start.
Game 7 and the series go to the Pacers. Final score here, 130 to 109. The 50-win, second-seeded Knicks season ends on the Garden floor this afternoon.
These guys never folded. They kept fighting, and so that's all you could ask for.
And there he goes. Game, well, the first game of the two Game 7s yesterday at the Garden was a masterpiece if you were rooting for the Pacers. And I mean that literally. They had the best shooting day. They shot a higher percentage from the floor than any team ever had in any playoff game in NBA history. And so let the questions begin. How much of that had to do with the Knicks being exhausted, and how much of that had to do with the Pacers and their young role players coming up huge in one of the toughest places to play in all of basketball? Let's go in search of some of those answers and more with Jay Will, who is here. And you know, Jay, we live in a New York-centric world because New York is New York, and we live here and all the rest of that. But one of the first things you said on our call this morning for before Get Up was, look, we got to give the love to the Pacers. They showed up and in the biggest game of the lives of almost every player on that roster, they played as well as they are capable of playing.
Also, Greeny, as a crazy person, and that's what I typically call people who are extremely competitive in life and everything they do, I thought to myself before that game started, what if the Pacers don't win this game? Could you imagine looking yourself in the mirror of your Tyrese Haliburton with some of the trash you've spoken, or if you're Nimhart, or if you're Nesmith, you're one of these guys, and you see the amount of guys that the Knicks have lost, from Julius Randle to Mitchell Robinson to OG Anunoby out there playing hurt, limping around. That was a must-win game for the Pacers. And I know, yes, Game 7, the Knicks are at home, Jalen Brunson. But you had all your players active on the roster. You had to get that game. You were the better team with better depth and better offense, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, they had a player coming off their bench in T.J. McConnell, who was one of the most important players on that team. And look, the old axiom, the rule of thumb, my dear beloved buddy Jalen Rose always said to me, role players play better at home than on the road. Well, yesterday, who are the Pacers' road players? Role players. They are Nesmith, and they are Turner, and they are Nembhard. And those guys yesterday shot 8 of 8, 7 of 11, and 8 of 10 from the floor. They combined for a total of 56 points, those three guys, shooting the lights out. That's the reason the Pacers won yesterday.
But why do role players play well on the road?
You tell me.
Because they have to be led by their superstar player. What happened in the first quarter? Tyrese Haliburton came out and said, no, this floor is mine. I'm going to own this moment. Yes, Jalen Brunson's been great, but he came out shooting the ball from three, talking to people on the sidelines. That was a huge differentiator. Another thing, Greeny, that you and I talked about during Get Up, that fans out there on social media thought I were crazy. I'm like, why is Nembhard on the likes of Jalen Brunson? How many times was I screaming, why isn't Nesmith on Brunson?
Yeah.
In Game 6 and 7.
Yeah, you're talking about the first two games of the series, to be clear. And Brunson was cooking him and them. And then they made the adjustment you were begging for after Game 1.
Yes, and then Nesmith, with that size, with that frame, he has a relentless motor. He just keeps running at you. Maybe sometimes not the most cerebral players, but energy-wise, size, length, he dropped the efficiency of Jalen Brunson. Now, I know people will say, well, Jalen Brunson hurt his hand when they're in striking distance, but still, you have to minimize the other team's best player and make those role players assume the star player responsibilities. And that's what Josh Hart and Dante DiVincenzo had to do, and they couldn't come through.
And so, look, we are going to have a kind of day here. It's not a popular thing to say in media today because media is generally built around hot takes, media of all kind. I don't just mean sports media. Everything is built on seeing things one way and one way only and saying it as strongly as you possibly can. And today is a day, however, where I think we're going to say the words, both sides are true a lot of times. So the Knicks fans, some of them anyway, if you go on Twitter and all that kind of stuff, they're going to blame their coach for the rash of injuries they had. The Knicks had a run of injuries starting, I guess, in January with Julius Randle and ending yesterday with Brunson breaking his hand. They had a rash of injuries that you basically never see. I can't remember the last time a team was as banged up as this one was. The guys who were playing significant minutes in their rotation in this postseason series began this year as like their ninth and tenth guys on this team. So people will look at that, and some of them will say, Tom Thibodeau has a history of injuries. It's his fault. And others will look at the particular situation, and they will say, he didn't do anything wrong. A lot of them were freak injuries and the rest of that. Which is right? What is the right thing to say about Tibbs this morning after that loss?
I think Tibbs is a phenomenal coach. But there has been a history that has followed Tibbs throughout the course of his career.
Right.
In which players have been injured when you need them to be available the most. Now, I have heard from players talk about the fact that they think his style is 24/7, 365 in your face, and that's not what you need for longevity in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things around, hey, this year, Greeny, I agree with your assessment, right? You can go either way. They had a great year. Two seed in the East, had a chance to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, a chance to win the NBA championship if they were healthy. But little things. Julius Randle, all right, he gets hurt. Why was he still in the game when you're up 15, 16 points with 3 minutes left to go in the game?
Because his coach is Tom Thibodeau, and that's what he does.
Yes. Okay. Game six, you're down 20 points. 3 minutes left. Why are your starters still in the game?
Same answer.
So these are the things that come back to haunt you.
Right.
That the only way you can truly dispel that is if you win a championship. I just don't know if we'll see him win a championship sooner than we'll actually see players say, I'm not sure I want to play for that. That's a legitimate concern. And by the way, you can do that with Josh Hart and Dante DiVincenzo, guys that were role players that have kind of evolved into star players, but that's not their real roles in a championship team.
Cam, remind me of what that poll was that came out. Look, Tom Thibodeau is a guy who's been around forever. Everybody knows him. Everybody remembers him from when he was on the bench with Doc and the Celtics, and then he became the coach of the Bulls, and Derrick Rose became the MVP, super high usage. Jimmy Butler playing 48 minutes a night in the playoffs, D-ing up LeBron. That's where Thibodeau became sort of legendary. And then he went to Minnesota, and the stars there had issues with him, and then he resurfaces here with the Knicks, and they have this run. Before this run, Tom Thibodeau's reputation was, what was that poll? Can we look that up? There was a poll that was done. Do you need a minute to find it?
I got it. So in April, this is less than a month ago, The Athletic did a poll, just an NBA player poll, responses to questions, who's the MVP, all this other stuff, which team will win the title, and Thibodeau was the answer for the top in one category. Which current coach, aside from your own, would you least want to play for?
Can
I give you another one, Greeny?
Yeah.
I'm not going to say who, but I've been around people who play in this league and having conversations over drinks about this. And some of the things you say, a lot of players end up talking about the fact that they thought Tibbs was better suited for a defensive tactician, assistant coach type of role on a championship team. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that is correct. Can Tom Thibodeau win a championship? Yes, 100%. But I think certain players look at him a certain way for what he could bring out on the defensive side. Not sure that leads to minutes, rotations, and things of that sort.
Right. I mean, look, this is a team, they didn't have household name superstars when the season began. No one expected Jalen Brunson to become this. Jalen Brunson was an ascending, very good player who, during this season, turned himself into an NBA superstar. Julius Randle is a very good to great NBA player, but he's not one of the small handful of top-level stars in this game. Tom Thibodeau, what he was able to do was take Josh Hart and Dante DiVincenzo and guys like that and turn them into a team that won 50 games. That's great coaching. But the point is, once you get the horse to water, can you make a drink? Here's what I'll say. I can't defend this, or at least I can't prove it. I believe if the Knicks had remained some semblance of healthy, they would have won this series, and I would have given them a real chance of beating the Celtics. With Julius Randle, forget it. I'm even talking about after that. With Robinson came back, if Embiid doesn't grab his leg, I mean, we'll never know what happens there. Bogdanovich, it's a fluke injury. He steps on a guy's foot, and he's done for the rest of the playoffs. Critical injury. And then Ananobi gets hurt. With those three guys healthy, not only do I think they win this series they just lost, but I would have given them a really good chance to beat Boston.
So I agree with you. I'm going to give you something based upon what you said that I think is starting to clarify a point for me. And I hope it gets debunked. I really do, because I love Tibbs.
Yeah, me too.
As a coach. Love him. We work with him here at ESPN.
He's a great guy.
I want to see him achieve the ultimate success. But you use the Embiid analogy. At what point do we start saying, well, if Embiid didn't get hurt?
Right.
Like, so what you're saying, I believe if these players didn't get hurt, that still is the theme that ends up following Tibbs. And to me, when does that theme become reality down the stretch?
Yeah. I mean, in his case, it did. You can't debunk a theory that has legitimacy without debunking it. Like, this didn't debunk it. So as great a season as it was, as great a run as it was, as great a job as he didn't debunk the theory that he works his guys too hard, all the rest of that. Now, I'll tell you a story. Going back to the early 90s, when I was just – where were you in the early 90s? You don't even – you were like in middle school?
I was in grammar school.
Yeah.
I was in grammar school.
I was covering the Bulls and the Knicks back then.
I was watching you.
In legendary series. No, I was covering them for a radio station in Chicago. You were in New Jersey watching other people. But anyway, the point of the story is – that those series became legendary. The Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, Michael Jordan, Patrick Ewing. You obviously grew up watching that rivalry. It was as good as sports ever have been in my lifetime. The contrast in styles. Because as you know, on the off days between these games, we reporters, we show up at the shoot-arounds. We show up at the practices. On the off days, Pat Riley had his team in there going at it for like an hour and a half, 2 hours. Phil Jackson, on the off days, they would watch tape. They would go through walkthroughs. They would do like all kinds of God knows what other kind of rituals Phil had, including one time he decided they weren't going to practice and they got on a ferry and they just toured around New York and he wanted to get everybody's mind off of it. So there's different ways to go about these things. Now, is that the reason that the Bulls kept winning and Riley's teams kept losing? Probably not. Michael Jordan had a lot to do with that. But my point is there's a lot of different ways to go about these things. Tom Thibodeau needs to prove it. Pat Riley was a champion. No one can take that away from him. If Thibodeau is going to shed this moniker, he's going to have to do it by winning it all.
And whoever they decide the big fish is, as we were talking about on Get Up with Brian Windhorst, saying that they have so much draft collateral for a big free agent to come in, and they have to buy into that. And one of the things that's happening in the new age, Greeny, you and I are cut from the old school cloth. Like, I don't mind practicing trying to rip somebody's head off. But there is something about playing 82 games in a regular season. From somebody who's done it, it is a grueling grind on your body. So not having that time to breathe, there are a lot of players who are at the prime of their career that are thinking, hey, I want to make sure that my body is in the right situation with the right type of rest to be ready to play in those minutes. I'm not sure they want to practice at the same load.
You just made me think of a really interesting thing. Because if there's one thing that's kind of going through my head as I watch this NBA postseason, as one who grew up, so I mean, you want to go through my credentials in basketball? I go back 50 years. I'm watching the sport, and I love it more than I love anything else. And I go back to Bill Walton winning the championship in the 70s, and Rick Barry, and all those. So that's how far back I go, and how long I've been watching the game. I never remember injuries being as prevalent in the postseason as they are now. Never. I mean, teams. This just didn't happen. Guys didn't break down in the playoffs the way they do now. So it begs two questions. One, is there something about the way they're working that is contributing to this? Two, have we genuinely reached the point, you just made me think of it, where 82 games is just too many in the regular season? If these guys are going to break down, you do not want we just had a postseason without Giannis. Embiid had to, you know, force himself to come back. The Knicks has a different injury, but all these different injuries that we're getting and they're dropping like flies at the playoffs, Porzingis and everybody else. Like, is there just too much on these guys' bodies considering the way they are conditioned and the way they play today?
Well, most people take that question and say, well, these guys should be able to play 82 games because the physicality is way less than what it was back in the 80s and the 90s. And my combat to that is, yeah, but they're running way more mileage.
That's the point.
Like, it's the pace of the game.
The athleticism is greater. Yeah.
So the probability of injury goes up drastically.
Yeah. It's one thing to get hurt because someone is hand-checking you and maybe they break your finger. It's another thing if you have run a half marathon in every single game that you're playing? It's an interesting question. It's not one we can answer sitting right here. Jay Will, good to have you back. I know you had the little knee scope there. You're doing better. I'm glad that you're doing better.
A little LCL, but you make it better.
I'll do everything I can. I'm a doctor. Or if not, you know, Bubba could take care of you there because he was a surgeon in a previous life. Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. Bundle home and auto and save. Visit progressive.com. Just pull up a chair. I got a lot to say today, and we'll start it next on ESPN Radio. Shopping for Father's Day is usually a challenge because you wait until the last minute, but Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Father's Day. Whether you're shopping for your brother's first Father's Day or your Renaissance man grandpa, whose interests are all over the map, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and over. You can also sort by category, like cologne, watches, and more, or gift lists, like items for the grill master or the golfer. You can also get top tech, from Beats headphones to JBL portable speakers. Or if you're looking for top brands, you'll find gifts from Calvin Klein, Polo Ralph Lauren, and Columbia. So what are you waiting for? Father's Day is June 16th, and it'll be here before you know it. Macy's offers the ultimate gift guide to make selecting something special for dad incredibly easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know we're big fans of BetterHelp and all the ways it can help people with their mental health. And this year has gone quickly. And so I'd like you to think about something that you're proud of in 2024 so far. Think about what you would be proud of. What's something you still want to accomplish this year? And when life goes fast, it's important to take a moment to celebrate those wins. And therapy can help you take stock of your progress and set achievable goals for the next 6 months for the rest of the year so you can look back on the rest of the year the way that you have this past year to know that it went the way that you wanted. And therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, I urge you, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So take a moment for you. Take a moment. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greeny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Greeny.
Greeny, the podcast. This is Greeny.
I have overwhelming admiration for what they've accomplished. That said, I'm going to go back to what I was saying. I think the Knicks in a Game 7 scenario are in big trouble. And I don't care if that game is being played on Madison Square Garden, in Rucker Park, or on the moon. You got a 42-hour turnaround from Game 6 to Game 7 with travel.
This is Greeny.
I hate to say I was right. No, I love to say I was right. In this case, I would love to have been wrong. But I very seldom am. Greeny, presented by Progressive Insurance. I mean, this one was just so easy to see coming. I said it last week over and over and over again. The Knicks needed to end this series on Friday night in Indiana, and they didn't come out like they knew that. Or at least they didn't come out and play that way. The Pacers played better when this series was being decided. And that's what happened. On Friday night and Sunday, the Pacers were just a better team. And how much of that is about the Knicks finally running out of gas? A lot of it. But sports history is filled with teams that just didn't get over the hump because they got hurt. Part of the game here is winning the war of attrition. And in this case, the Pacers won that by first-round knockout. And in the end, they wind up winning it at the end of a 15-round heavyweight fight. Greeny with you. We'll get into it in 30 seconds after this Reminder from Vivid Seats. Score the seats and the memories this spring with Vivid Seats, your home for every buzzer beater, puck drop, and home run. Vivid Seats has a great selection and great prices on all the games that matter to you. And with a 100% buyer guarantee, Vivid Seats gives you the peace of mind for the ultimate fan experience. Celebrate your fandom with unbeatable rewards like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN. All right, question of the day.
You ask these questions.
Greeny's question of the day.
Hembo is still not here because, you know, apparently it takes 7 days for your niece to graduate from high school. But I do have hashtag Bubba and hashtag Cam with us this morning. And so, guys, I came up with this question of the day, and I do rather like it. Let me bounce it off you here and see how you feel. So after the game was over, a lot of people took great note of the fact that Tyrese Halliburton was wearing a hoodie in the postgame press conference that had Reggie Miller and the choke sign on it, a legendary taunting the garden moment, maybe the most legendary taunting the garden moment of all time. And Tyrese Halliburton wore that out to the postgame press conference. And he had a good line when he was asked about it after.
Yeah, I mean, we text every day. I mean, this has just been a good mentor for me. But, I mean, I'm just wearing a hoodie. I like to be comfy on the plane.
Okay, fair enough. So that's funny and all that kind of stuff. And I'm here for the trolling. I am 100% comfortable with the trolling. But I ask you the following question, Bubba. If you've brought that hoodie with you, if you're going to wear that hoodie in the postgame, do you need to wear that walking in the building? We all saw a video of Tyrese Halliburton entering the building yesterday. He was not wearing that hoodie. That was the second most viewed entrance to the Garden yesterday after Stephen A's. Stephen A entered the Garden in that white suit looking like he was ready for Game 7. Tyrese Halliburton walked in, if I'm not mistaken, wearing a pair of shorts, a white T-shirt, and a vest over it. And then afterwards, he's got the Reggie hoodie ready to go. The question is, if you're going to rock the hoodie, do you need to wear that walking in the door so you can then put your money where your mouth is?
Oh, 100%. I mean, the only out I would give him is if he somehow wore that after every single time, and he was flying out with it every time. But that clearly hasn't been the case. So he clearly brought that, packed it in his bag, and was going to say, hey, if we win, I'm going to put this on. But if we lose, I'll just wear my normal clothes. And that's not how it's supposed to work. You know, if you're going to be a tough guy, be a tough guy and wear it beforehand. So, you know, and it's not like we would have spent, you know, all show doing it. We would have been like, oh, yeah, he wore that going in and they lost. But you have enough confidence to wear it before the game. You can't just show up after the game and wear it. That's not a good look.
Well, here's what would have happened, though, Cam. If he wears that walking in, and the Knicks win, he's getting obliterated.
It's
and
bad,
that's
yeah.
why. That's just
yeah,
why.
Yeah, I mean, he would have, but it wouldn't have been like forever. It would have been it would have just crushed him for a little bit.
Would have lived for a long time.
Would have lived a long time. Would have lived
but,
certainly.
Well, conversely, if they won like they did and he played well, he would have looked a lot cooler.
A lot time all-time great called shot if that happens.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's why we're making the point.
No, that's I mean, so you can't be
it brings us back to the original
to
question,
it, yeah.
Cam. If you got the guts to do it, if you got the guts to call that shot going in, it means you've got the guts to put it online. You know who would have done it? Reggie would have done it. Reggie Miller would have done it. Reggie Miller would not have put that on after the game and only worn it in the event that they won. He would have worn it walking in the door and said, yes, I want that. I want all that smoke. I want all that attention. I want all that pressure on me. I'm good with all of that. Now, again, I like Halliburton a lot. I love this team. I mean, it's impossible not to watch them and admire how good they are. I love a team where the role players play like they do. I love that. Neesmith, you know, did I watch every game the Pacers played this year? Obviously not, as didn't most people. So like many others, I'm just finding out a lot about some of these role players as we go. Obviously, Miles Turner has been around a really long time, and you know him. But the Nembhards and the Neesmiths and T.J. McConnell, who you remember from other places, stepping in. I mean, this Pacers team is really good, and they're deep. And Rick is an excellent coach. And they won the series because they deserve to win it. There isn't anything else to be said. But there is a part of me that feels like if you're going to talk the talk, you got to walk the walk. If you're going to wear the hoodie, Cam, I think you got to wear it on your way in the door.
I see what you're saying. I don't know if I see it exactly the same way because there's been enough established trash talk back and forth. And obviously the hoodie is the big symbol, the iconic moment from Reggie Miller. So if you're going to do that, it looks better to, you know, preempt the game with that. But that's the advantage they get for winning, right? Like, he can showboat afterwards, even if he didn't do it beforehand. He can pack it in his bag and put it away if they lose and put it on if they win. Like, that's the advantage you get when you shoot 67% from the field. Halliburton had a great game. He had a rough start to the series. He came on strong at the end of these series games. So that's the edge he gets when he wins. I get people knocking him for it, but that's what you get when you knock him out in game seven in the Garden. You get to do that thing.
No. Because if you're gonna be that guy, if you wanna be that guy, and God bless him, be that guy. I'm all in on being that guy. But don't be that guy only when you win. You know what I mean? Like, it's very easy. Anyone can put the hoodie on after you win. The only reason to me that you could beat an excuse is if after the game was over and they had won, someone handed it to him and said, here, wear this hoodie.
No, that's in his closet.
Right, sure. That's what I'm saying. There's no question. He made a point. And they're on the road. So he made a point of bringing it.
Right. He clearly packed two options.
It's in the duffel.
Winning and losing.
That's exactly right. They played at home Friday night. They flew to New York Saturday. He obviously took the time. It was a premeditated act to bring the hoodie and wear it. And he made the decision. I'm going to wear this only if we win.
And definitely,
there's a little something in sports about only if we win that I don't love. I mean, it is the very definition of a front runner. That if you were to look up front runner in the dictionary, I think you could put two pictures. One of them is Tyrese Halliburton walking in there in a t-shirt and shorts, and the other one is him in the post-game press conference wearing the Reggie Miller choke sweatshirt. That's the only thing I have an issue with. Again, I love this team. I'm going to root for them like crazy in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I'll tell you what else. I don't think they have no chance.
I agree.
I really don't. The odds, what did I see? It's like the most one-sided odds in a conference final in God knows how long.
Yes, since the 97 Heat-Bulls conference finals, the Bulls were minus 1,700. I believe the Celtics are minus 1,400 in this series.
So let me remind everyone what that was. The Bulls were the defending champs. This was the season after they had won the 72 games and everything else. The Heat were a team that would never have gotten to the conference final that year if it hadn't been for the brawl. That was the year that Ewing and all those guys got suspended, and the Knicks, who had a 3-1 lead in that series, wound up losing it because they had to play Game 6 without Ewing and Game 7 without a whole bunch of their other stars. And the Knicks were the team everyone thought might give the Bulls a run for their money in that 97 conference final. The Heat were a team no one thought had any chance, and as it turned out, they didn't. And the odds were what the odds were. I tell you what, I mean, the odds taken, they're trusting the Celtics. I think this is an Indiana team that merely may have done a lot of growing up. This was a long series. I mean, the 2 weeks of this series felt like an eternity, and in so many ways they were. Think back. Game one was the illegal screen they called on Miles Turner. That feels like it happened when I was in high school.
That was so long ago.
Game two of this series was the one where Carlisle gets up afterwards and says, small market teams deserve a chance. Game three is the Nembhard miracle three at the end that, by the way, turned the entire series around. Even game four feels like a long time ago, but look what they did. The Pacers facing elimination. Coach went out there and did their lobbying. Came out and made a big shot to win a nail-biter on their home floor. Then got the blowout win. Then went to the Garden and weren't ready for the moment and got obliterated. And the world wrote them off again. Then came home and were just the better team. Friday and Sunday winning a Game 7 in the Garden. Young teams grow up during runs like this. I think they've got a really good chance of stealing one of these first two games against Boston. Everybody does. And if they do, I'm not saying that right now, all other things being equal, I would bet on the Pacers to win. But I definitely like those odds. Did I see they're plus 2,500 to win the championship?
I can look that up.
I think that's what we showed at the end of Get Up. I think that right now the Celtics are an odds-on favorite. The Timberwolves are next, followed by the Mavericks, and the Pacers are a distant last.
Yeah, by far.
Distant.
By far. Like, right. This is
Read
crazy to look at.
Read the numbers.
The Celtics are minus 155. The Timberwolves are plus 240. The Mavericks are plus 500. The Pacers are plus 2,500. They're all in this same round of the playoffs.
25 to 1 right now. There are only four teams left. Every one of them needs eight wins.
It's like the Pacers aren't even in the playoffs.
The Pacers are 25-1 to win the championship?
Yeah.
Like, that feels like something you might want to – just based on all the things that can happen. As this postseason – look, I don't even like putting these things out into the ether, but or into the atmosphere. But, like Porzingis has already gone down for the Celtics. What happens if one of their two most important guys wind up going down in the middle of this series? Now, all of a sudden, you're telling me 25-1? I kind of like it.
Yeah, the series line has also moved. The Celtics are still minus 1,000, but it has moved a little bit, and maybe that's because – they know for sure now that Porzingis is out for at least the start of the series. I think that's big. And even when he gets back, people were making the point this morning that he might not be fully healthy. And the Pacers play so fast. And they have guys inside who can kind of bully you in the paint a little bit. I know the Celtics have Al Horford too, but they have some taller guys that might not be able to be handled by the Celtics defensively. Now, on the other end, the Celtics are pretty much going to be able to score at will. So I think we're going to see some track meets early in the series. But this does feel like a series where the Pacers steal one of the first two games, and it's another sky-is-falling thing for the Celtics. And we'll see if they can recalibrate like they did the past two series. But this is a pretty fully healthy team that they have not had to face yet, the Celtics, in this playoffs.
Indiana is also a very tough place to play. I covered a million playoff games there back in the day. And I know that, you know, they've gone through lean times and whatever it is. And Wendy was making some points this morning about how they don't always have the best support when that team isn't playing well, et cetera, et cetera. All I know is I've only ever been in that building for big games. I've never been there for, like, you know, an average regular season game when the teams were bad. I know back in the Reggie days, that building is a tough place to go play. That will not be easy. So, and look, the Celtics have been better on the road than they've been at home overall. I'm looking on my screen here at plus 2,800. Is that right? Am I looking at plus 2,800 now to win the title?
I was looking at the live odds. It looks like 25, but it's moving around.
Full screen is 28.
No matter what.
Let's do that.
They are absurd underdogs.
Let's throw $100 on the Pacers to win just for fun.
We'll be rich.
I'm very bad at math. If you bet $100 on something and you get 28-1, does that mean you get $2,800 if you're right?
No, that's the 2,800. You would get $2,800.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Isn't that 2,800?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. So.
Sorry, I misheard you.
Yeah. Well, okay. Good point. By definition, it's 28 times your bet.
Yes.
So it's 28 times 100. So it's 20. Yeah. But we both said the same thing.
Yes, we did.
And then disagreed with each other, which is hilarious. It explains why we do this for a living. It explains why we are not like in the nuclear
2,800?
Physics.
No. 2,800.
It's not 2,800. It's definitely 2,800. Anyway, it's not 24 hours, guys. It's just a day. Anyway, the point of it is, let's do that. Let's just throw $100 on this. I'll front it. Bubba. So here's the question. If I said to you, Bubba, bet, if you can get 28-1 odds, put $100 on this, I'll front it. If we lose the $100, I'll pay it. If we win, we'll split the 2,800 evenly. Just the three of us. Hembo's out. He's out. If I did that, Hembo wouldn't make the bet. Hembo would say, my chances of just keeping the $100 are so much better than my chances of owing them $2,800 that I'm willing to take the risk that I will have to write the check myself for, you know, whatever it is, the two-thirds of $2,800. If I offered you $100 right now and told you to make this bet, you are well within your rights to not make the bet. It doesn't make any difference to me one way or the other. You're going to have to pay it off if the... One way you can keep $100 in the event we lose. The other way, you yourself risk losing money on the equation and a much bigger chunk of money than you do the $100. Which would you do?
I mean, I'm not going to be – I don't want to do anything associated with Hembo, so I would rather place the bet and do what you're supposed to
do. See, it's different from the lottery. Like, every time you place the Powerball, I'm convinced you don't actually bet it because we'll have no way of knowing that you did or you didn't.
Sure.
You can be like, oh, no, the numbers were 9, 6, 22, and 17.
He's been collecting $2 increments for the past 15 years.
But in this case, we all know exactly what it is. No, Bubba's been collecting $20 ahead going back to the Mike and Mike days on these Powerballs.
We haven't won yet. We're trying.
We've been doing it. But Bubba, I think, is going to put his kids through school.
We're trying to win. What do you want from me?
On this. It's actually a reasonably good question. Which is the smarter thing to do? Because it isn't, again, if I say, put $100 on this for us as a group, you're not actually doing anything wrong by not betting it. I mean, I guess in theory you're doing something wrong, but you're on the hook for the money no matter what, right? You can't say, oh, I didn't make the bet after the fact. So once you say, okay, Greeny, we're in for this, now you've become the house, right? You get to keep the 100 if you want.
You're saying if the Pacers win, then I have to come up with the money.
Right. So if the Pacers win, let's say it's 27-1, because that's a math even I can do. That would get split up. It would be 900 for Cam and 900 for me.
Right.
So you either keep $100 or you lose $1,800. The alternative is you risk nothing, but you only get any money in the event that the Pacers win, which is extremely unlikely.
Or I'm theoretically getting $100 from you, right?
No, my point is the one way, if you bet the hunt, see, this is why none of us, I just laid the scenario out.
Right.
What's There's the two different ways you could do this.
Right.
You could pocket the 100, in which case you're risking $1,800, or you could bet the 100, in which case you're risking nothing,
But let's say I bet the 100 and they don't win. Am I getting reimbursed for that 100?
Yes. I'm fronting the 100, as I said.
He already handed it to you.
I'm fronting the 100. You make the bet, but I'm fronting the 100. In the event we lose, I lose 100, you guys lose nothing. You're risking nothing.
Got it.
In the event we win, you get 900, Cam gets 900, I get 900.
Got it.
But if you don't bet it in the first place, is this not obvious? do I need to keep explaining this?
I'm placing the bet.
I don't think we should place this bet. We don't even know what the numbers are.
Yeah, we can't understand the bet.
I'm placing the bet. I'm ready to go.
Put the bet on it. If we can get 2,700 or better, 27-1 or better, then place it. Put $100 on it, and I will cover it. Starting Stronger starts at AutoZone, where they've got battery solutions in the form of free battery testing, free battery charging, and replacement batteries that fit your needs. That's what makes them America's number one battery destination. Get in the zone with AutoZone. We still have the rant of the day and an explanation of how sometimes the beginning of something turns out to be the end. That's on the way. Plus, I thank you for saying trivia in my ear. Something terrible has happened to my rundown here.
Us too.
It was a disaster.
Our Google Doc is a mess right now.
Who did it? Who screwed up the Google Doc?
We don't know. Some alien
Someone went into the Google Doc and screwed it up.
Well, so we don't know what happened. It got all messed up, so we had to revert back to pre-show. So everything is gone, but it was weird.
Hembo is sabotaging
us. I think it might be Hembo sabotaging us. Yeah. One way or the other, what's the trivia?
Yeah, we're talking about Raiders legend and Hall of Famer Jim Otto, who passed away at the age of 86 yesterday, started all 210 games of his career, never missed a single game. He is fourth on the list for most games played by a Raider. Who is first?
First for most games played by a Raider. Answer next on ESPN Radio.
Feeling like you need a marketing degree and an extra day in your week to successfully market your small business? Let Constant Contact do the heavy lifting for you. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has powerful tools that make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more to boost your business. Now, in just a few clicks, you can launch a marketing campaign that's tailored to your business and goals. That includes email, social, SMS, and more. So you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track your business growth. Plus, you can always count on Constant Contact's award-winning customer support for guidance along the way. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Greeny, the podcast.
Be with you on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. I love this music. There is nothing better than the NFL Films music, and we use it to set up a good trivia question today about Jim Otto. Cam, go.
That's right. Jim Otto passed away at the age of 86 yesterday. Hall of Famer for the Raiders. Started all 210 games of his career. Never missed a game. He's fourth on the list of most games played by a Raider. Who is first?
So my dream in life is that I go on a game show and I could win $1 million if I can answer the following question. Name all of the starters on the Oakland Raiders Super Bowl championship team of 1977. That's never going to happen, but I could do it. And the offensive line from left to right was Art Shell, Gene Upshaw. The center was Dave Dalby. The right guard was George Buehler, or Buehler, B-U-E-H-L-E-R. But for some reason, I think it was pronounced Buehler. And then the right tackle was John Vella. Shell and Upshaw were there for 1,000 years each. I think the answer is going to be one of those two guys. And I'm trying to decide between them. I'm going to go with Upshaw. It's a guess. My guess is it's one of those two guys. I will go Gene Upshaw. Bubba.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are a little before my time, although I'm obviously familiar with Shell and Upshaw. So I'm going to go with the first name that stuck out to me, the height of my youth, Sebastian Janikowski.
Oh.
I feel like a lot of these times these answers are, you know,
kicker.
Special teamers,
yeah.
People who played forever. He kicked forever.
Do kickers count?
They play in the games.
I sure hope so.
Well, if kickers count, then okay. That takes all the fun. If the answer is a kicker, I'm
going to
be very disappointed.
So I'm going with the Polish kicker, Sebastian Janikowski.
All right, and did you get stuff from Brandon?
Oh, I got a text from Brandon, all right, and I'm going to read it all again because it's that funny. Brandon texted me, the famous kicker on the Raiders, I forget his name, or Art Shell, or Tim Brown, LOL, will make my decision in a minute. Jeez. And then he seemed to remember his name and said, Janikowski is his name. I remember now. He was chubby.
Okay.
So he's going with Janikowski.
That's the pot calling the kettle black, Brandon. But okay, fair enough. And what did Jack say?
I don't have anything from Jack.
Nothing from Pineapple Jack?
So we got two Janikowskis and one Upshaw.
He actually said Charles Woodson to me, which
okay.
I think of Woodson more as a Packer anyway. But all right, go ahead. What's the answer?
The answer is Sebastian Janikowski.
I hate that answer. I do not ever like it being a kicker. And I'm not knocking the kickers. They played in the games.
You're knocking the kickers.
I'm just saying, like, the consecutive starts.
I mean, you asked if kickers count. I think that's knocking kickers.
No, kickers shouldn't count. Who are 2 and 3?
Tim Brown is second with 240. Gene Upshaw is third with 217. Obviously, Jim Otto is fourth. Ray Guy, another kicker/punter, 207. And Art Shell also has 207.
All right, well, that sucked. Greeny with you live from the Seaport, brought to you by Patron. Perfection starts with Patron. Outside of the game sevens, can I get into a little golf here, Bubs? Do I have a minute to get into a little golf?
We can do some golf.
So Xander Schauffele wins the PGA Championship yesterday for his first major. There were a lot of people in the golf world, myself included, not that I'm in the golf world, but I'm just a fan, who were really happy for him. This is a guy, for those who don't follow the sport closely, who has been knocking on the door. One of those, you know, many times a bridesmaid, never the bride kind of things. He's come so close to winning so many times. He had a really good chance to win the Masters a couple of years ago. Has made just one or two critical mistakes on Sundays that have cost him. And this time he did not. And he had every chance to give it away yesterday and didn't. Came up huge. Needed to birdie the very birdieable par 5 18th to win it yesterday and did it, even though his tee shot left him standing in a bunker. His feet were in a bunker. The ball was above his feet on his second shot. He didn't have a chance to go for the green, which he wouldn't have done anyway. I wouldn't think when all he needed was a birdie to wind up winning. Par would send him into a three-hole aggregate playoff with Bryson DeChambeau, who is the one I really want to talk about. So Schauffele, good for him. First, foremost, and forever, he wins. He's a major champion. It changes his life. It changes people's perception of him, and that's all great. He seems like a very likable person. I've never met him in my life, but I was very happy for him winning yesterday, as were, I think, a lot of people. But golf has become so complicated now. Like, the LIV thing has gone through so many different iterations, from they are the enemy to, oh my goodness, everyone is joining, to, oh my goodness, they're going to strike a deal and they're all going to be together, to, well, they can't figure out how to make a deal, so now it gets really ugly, to, wait, Rahm went, to, wait, is Rory going to go, to, what the hell is going on here? And I'm left in a place where, just as the fan of the sport, I don't know how to feel about all that stuff. Just as a fan of the sport, I'm not talking, this has nothing to do, well, I guess indirectly it does, with where the funding comes from and all the rest of that. I'm merely talking about the fact that my favorite sport got splintered in ways I could imagine, like a major, you know, a football league coming into existence, not like the XFL or the UFL, but one where, like, Patrick Mahomes goes and plays for them. All of a sudden, Mahomes and Kelsey and Jalen Hurts and Aaron Rodgers and just whoever else you want are playing in this other league. And the feeling you would have is, man, they're ruining my football. Like, all of a sudden, I'm watching these games with lesser guys I've never heard of because those guys are over there just on the ultimate cash grab, competing in ways that I have no interest in watching whatsoever. I mean, for those who aren't paying attention to it, they're playing with, you know, they're shotgun starts and three rounds and wearing shorts and playing music. And I don't know, can you buy mulligans? I don't even know what the hell they're doing there. But the point is, every part of me has rooted against the LIV guys from the moment the LIV started. And I wonder if I'm not the only one yesterday who wound up kind of rooting for DeChambeau. Like, the last thing, if you had told me Wednesday night, Thursday morning, you're going to find yourself rooting for Bryson DeChambeau on Sunday, I would have taken that bet. You could have bet me way more than the bet we're making on the Pacers. The odds would have been a lot longer. But he's so entertaining to watch. He was so spectacular yesterday. And then, I got to tell you, classy when it was over. Could not have handled it with more class, the way he handled Schauffele beating him, both in the moment and in what he said. And so it just leaves me, and I just wonder how many golf fans I'm speaking for when I say, I just don't know what to feel anymore. Like, I just don't know what to think anymore. We need to find a way to get this whole thing back together again. The world of golf is not disparate enough that it can support two completely separate tours. We need these guys together on some level. So that was the overwhelming thought I had coming out of what was otherwise a fascinating weekend that began with all that Scheffler nonsense and ended with a great performance by Xander Schauffele. We're back in a moment on ESPN Radio.
When you're on a business trip, you know what goes completely off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Greeny, the podcast.
Greeny with you here on ESPN Radio. Soundbite from afterwards yesterday that I both loved and hated from Jalen Brunson after the Knicks season came to an end, a season that was an extraordinary magic carpet ride. And he said what I think he's supposed to say, which is when he said this season to him was not a success.
You didn't think this was a successful year.
Right.
Why do you feel that way, and how would you evaluate the year?
Did we win the championship? Did we get close? So, no. That's my mindset. That's just how it is.
So, look, if you're a fan of the team, I suppose that's what you want him to say. I sincerely hope, as a human being, that a few weeks from now, he doesn't feel that way. Because we do not live in a binary world. Not everything is either a success or a failure. He can be disappointed that they didn't go farther, and I'm sure a lot of the fans are today. I'm disappointed they didn't go farther. But this season was the furthest thing in the world from a failure. He was brilliant. He established himself as a genuine NBA superstar. The team had a better season than anyone anticipated. They overcame injuries left and right and left and right. How many teams lose their second best player in January? He never comes back, and they still have the kind of season that this team did. So, look, in the very binary world of win or disaster, I get it. That leads you to disaster, leads you to failure. But this was not a failure. In fact, it was a success. Success just comes in different grades, different levels. So maybe it wasn't an A-level success, but it was certainly a B-level success. This season is a failure for Denver. This season is a failure for the Celtics if they don't win it. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else. I mean, this season was a failure for Milwaukee. But when you look at where everyone wound up relative to their place in the general scheme of things, I think the Knicks season can only be described as a success. And I do not think that is a loser's way of looking at it. And again, in that initial moment, that's what I want my star to say. That's what I want the best player on my team to say. And there may very well be part of him that is just saying that to set a tone for the organization and for everybody else. Like, in every way, it's the right thing for him to say. But that doesn't mean it's true. It does not. And I hope he doesn't really feel that way down deep inside. Because this season for him and for them was an enormous success. We continue in 20 seconds.
Thanks for listening to Greeny the Podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN. And also available wherever you get your podcasts.